Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
It is the Wild West for data centers in Denver these days. They're popping up using power and water with no specific rules to regulate that. Our Mark Salinger looks at a plan to pause all new construction.
I never could have imagined that something like this would ever come into the neighborhood.
In the middle of Elyria, Swansea.
Still shocking despite seeing it every day now.
A building is cause for a fight.
The most important thing that we're fighting for is to protect the health of our neighbors. We have the highest rates of asthma, some of the highest rates of heart disease.
Alfonso Espino is with the Globeville Elyria Swansea Coalition, the construction behind him at 49th and Race.
Endless rows of computers.
Will soon be home to Denver's largest data center.
Because it's so big and so massive, it's going to consume a lot of energy and water, but they're also going to be running a bunch of diesel generators.
This is right in the middle of a neighborhood and shows where Denver's rules are at right now with this type of building.
There is no rules that govern data centers of this size.
He's right. Denver currently has no zoning rules specifically for data centers, no energy requirements, and no water use regulations. But that could change.
We have absolutely nothing right now on the books that regulate those data centers, and that's why we are putting forward a moratorium.
Next month, Denver City Council will vote on whether to pause all new data center construction for up to a year as the city writes the rules that govern them. Councilmember Daryl Watson represents Elyria Swansea.
That current one building that's being built in that community in my district will not be impacted. Their permits went through based on the old zoning that the city has. We want to make sure that no one else comes in under that old zoning.
It's too late for this one. This neighborhood has already been changed.
When you visit a data center, you'll walk away with three impressions. They're super loud, they're super cold, and there's nobody there.
There are plans to build several more data center buildings on that same campus there in Elyria, Swansea. That neighborhood has some of the worst air quality in the state, with the Purina factory nearby and Kyle, other industrial areas as well.
So this is Denver's approach. What do we see other municipalities doing?
Yeah, so Larimer County up north in Fort Collins, they've also put a moratorium in place. Weld County also passed new regulations on where and how these data centers can be built. For example, not on farmland in Weld County, they say, just in industrial areas up there.
We should probably reduce our usage of these things just like we are water. Maybe you need to stop asking Claude to pick out your outfits every day. You look great.
It looks all right, right?
Right. You pair your own turtlenecks, Mark.
I'll let my wife decide that next time.
Mark Salinger, thank you. Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert is part of a new push to build President Trump's White House ballroom project. Republicans are now saying that the shooter intercepted at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday is more proof that the president needs his on-site ballroom at the White House, which is currently stalled by legal challenges. A 31-year-old suspect is facing federal charges after prosecutors say he opened fire outside the gala at the Washington Hilton on Saturday. Prosecutors say the suspect sent notes to his family right before the shooting, saying it was his duty to target Trump administration officials who were gathered with journalists at a ballroom at the hotel. Shortly after the shooting, members of the Trump administration began calling for construction to resume on the president's ballroom. They now say it's a national security issue. Construction was halted after preservationists sued, claiming the administration didn't go through proper channels before they bulldozed down the east wing of the White House.
We absolutely believe that there is no better example of why this ballroom is necessary. Aside from all the very positive things the ballroom will bring to this country and to Washington, D.C., than what happened on Saturday night. We're basically stuck at this point in this city with having an event like that at a hotel, so underneath a ton of hotel rooms.
It's worth noting that the White House, the Trump administration, actually doesn't host that event. It's put on by the White House Correspondents Association. The Department of Justice says they're going to ask a court to dismiss the lawsuit. Boebert says she's drafting legislation for Congress to approve the ballroom, saying, quote, "I don't believe congressional approval is required for the project, but if it'll keep activist judges on the sidelines, so be it." And right now, a House committee is launching an investigation into whether the Biden administration improperly asked a bank in Colorado to turn over Congresswoman Boebert's private financial records. Boebert has accused the former administration of spying on her following the January 6 insurrection. Our partners at Colorado Politics were the first to report on the House Judiciary Committee's request for Alpine Bank to turn over documents as part of a congressional investigation into former Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith. Smith attempted to prosecute Trump for conspiring to overturn his loss in the 2020 election. Republicans on the Judiciary Committee say that as part of that investigation, the Biden administration sought records on Boebert and other Trump allies. In a letter to Alpine Bank, the committee claims that Biden's Justice Department subpoenaed Alpine for Boebert's data as part of, quote, politicized investigations into Trump. They're requesting the bank turn over any records of communication with the Biden administration by mid-May. Tina Peters keeps taking L's while locked up for her role in an election security breach. Today, the judge who sentenced her and will re-sentence her declined her request that he step off the case. The former Mesa County clerk had said District Court Judge Matthew Barrett is biased against her. He chewed Peters out for how her election rigging lies have impacted Mesa County, costing the county money for new election equipment and making it a national laughingstock. Judge Barrett said today in a ruling that even if he accepts Peters' argument that he was angry and used harsh language at sentencing, that does not disqualify him from sentencing her again. Colorado's Court of Appeals ruled that Judge Barrett must resentence Peters without any regard to her speech, which is one of the things that he criticized while giving her a 9-year sentence. Peters recently lost her effort to have her case reheard by the Court of Appeals, which ordered that resentencing, but rejected all of her other challenges to her conviction itself. Democrats at the state capitol have an idea of where to find money to increase school funding for the next decade. If you instinctively reached a hand to protect your wallet, you know what they're thinking. For the third time since 2019, Democrats will ask voters to voluntarily give up their taxpayer Bill of Rights refunds. Twice, voters have said no. Our Marshall Zellinger explains why Dems think the third time will be the charm.
Colorado Democrats failed in 2019 with Proposition CC to get voters to give up TABOR refunds for education and roads. In 2023, voters rejected Proposition HH, the effort to reduce TABOR refunds in a confusing ballot issue to minimize the inevitable increase to property taxes. Now, Colorado Democrats at the state legislature want to go to the ballot again to ask voters to give up TABOR refunds for 10 years for K-12 education, but also for other state needs.
Can education grow with our economy? 2% a year, every year for the next 10 years, the end result of which is billions of dollars more for K-12 public education.
The bill sponsored by Democratic State Senator Jeff Bridges and a majority of Democrats at the legislature would use TABOR refund dollars to pay teachers more money, lower class sizes, and give teachers access to continuing education.
TABOR says if you want to keep more revenue, ask the people.
It would allow state lawmakers to keep and spend $4.5 billion more dollars that otherwise would have been refunds if those refunds exist that year. Voters approved a shorter version of this in 2004 when Referendum C allowed the state to keep and spend TABOR refunds for 5 years.
Now we're back in the same situation we were when Governor Bill Owens, Republican Governor Bill Owens, said this is terrible for the state.
I've supported TABOR all my life. It had an unexpected structural problem in it called the ratchet. We fixed that with Referendum C.
Former Republican Governor Bill Owens had bipartisan support for Referendum C, which solved for budget problems during a recession. As of today, the state can keep and spend close to $4 billion more because of Referendum C.
The problem we have here is not a ratchet. It's really an overspending issue.
Essentially, the question is, should education be held back by that TABOR rationing limit, or should it be allowed to grow with our economy?
Former Governor Bill Owens does not like being attributed all the time when it's like, well, this happened one other time. If voters were to approve this, the money the state keeps would not just go to K-12 education. The first drawdown would actually fund the property tax exemption for seniors that usually comes from TABOR dollars anyways. Then there's the 2% for K-12. Then any other additional money would go to a children's account, which could be spent on K-12, preschool, even Medicaid for kids, anything child-related. And Kyle, until Friday, that bill had said it was just a general fund account. It got amended to say children's account. So there's some narrowing of what that would be used for.
We know that one thing that impacts how these ballot proposals function or how voters perceive them is how things stack up on the ballot, whether other asks for your money. And there might be another ask on November's ballot for your money for education.
Well, it's the Bell Policy Center has been pushing for a graduated income tax, which would lower income tax for many and raise income tax for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. And it would fund education, healthcare, childcare. So you've got this other thing that's like, hey, do you want to fund education? Also, if the lawmakers are putting this on the ballot, I assume one might go away. But if you're given these, not competing, like they deal with similar things, is it too much for a voter to be like, whoa, wait a minute?
Yeah, you could look at that and be like, hey, let's not be so rough on the millionaires, right? Like, let's go a little bit easier on them. Professor Marshall Zellinger, thank you. Here's one reason why I love your weekly micro-giving campaigns, and I have 307 weekly reasons why I do. You have repeatedly given to help Coloradans all over the state. Most recently, about $60,000 raised since last week to help the Boys and Girls Club of the San Luis Valley build an enormous child care center to help with the serious lack of child care in the valley. I want to let you know there is a new way to track the impact of your giving, $18 million worth over 6 years, and a way to see where in Colorado you have helped our neighbors. You can now go to wordofthanks.org. And that's where you can nominate a nonprofit that is making an impact in Colorado. And you can apply to have your own nonprofit featured. I review every nomination personally. So swing by wordofthanks.org, if nothing else, just to take a look at the map and to smile at all the good that you've done. After weeks of being told to flock off, a driver finally gets his license plate taken off the statewide naughty list. If you have a zero on your license plate, this story is for you. Another major company is packing up their headquarters in Denver and heading to Miami.
Really exciting and wonderful knowing that this space is intentionally designed for our students.
A school specially created for students who can sometimes be overlooked. We get a look inside next. That innocent driver we told you about last week, the guy who kept getting pulled over because of Flock camera alerts, can now drive in Colorado like the rest of us, which means just being watched by Flock all the time, but not constantly being pulled over. Kevin Dawsman got pulled over twice in the span of a few weeks in Cherry Hills Village because Flock cameras were flagging his plate for a warrant out of Gilpin County. Turns out another driver was pulled over by the State Patrol and didn't show up for their Gilpin County court date. The sheriff's office flagged that driver's plate, which had the letter O in it, but also flagged Dossman's plate, which is the same letter combo, but with the number zero on it. It's because the camera system has trouble telling the difference between a zero and an O. So after getting stuck in this doom loop from hell with law enforcement telling Dossman that they couldn't help him, the Gilpin County Sheriff's Office finally removed the warrant assigned to his truck's plate after our story. We are thinking that perhaps that man is not the only person in Colorado with this problem. If you have been pulled over and told that your plate has been incorrectly flagged by Flock, let us know. Like Coach Prime, we ain't hard to find. Just email next at 9news.com. RE/MAX is moving its headquarters out of Colorado after a company in Miami bought the large real estate brokerage service. The company announced today that the real brokerage reached an agreement to buy them in a cash and stock transition. The combined companies will be headquartered in Miami. RE/MAX has been out of Denver since the 1970s. The companies say they'll maintain a significant presence in the Denver area. We should say this is the second large publicly traded company to move its headquarters from Denver to Miami this year. Palantir announced its move from Colorado to Florida in the dead of night back in February. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along now. Oh, what do you have there?
I got some soup.
You got some soup?
It's soup.
Yeah,
the
folks who have watched this program for a while may remember our great soup versus stew versus chili debate with our producer Mallory, who was on the wrong side of that debate, but proactively, Chris, told me today that she had minestrone soup for lunch today. Some say minestrone. Mm. Those people are wrong. It is minestrone. Mallory is right for once.
Mallory is exactly right. That is, I think, unquestionably a soup here, right? There is no question.
Oh, yeah, no. Minestrone or minestrone, as the people who are wrong say, a soup.
And an elite one is at that.
Oh, I would say so.
This is my wife's idea, by the way. I was going to the store. She said, what should we get for dinner? And I said, what should we get for dinner? She said, well, soup, duh. It is soup weather, and we are seeing some of that. I'm going to try and do this entire segment with a can of soup in my left hand here. Some showers for us here along the Front Range. That rain steadiest for us north of Denver. Right now in town, we're not seeing a whole lot of soup weather for us with some rain showers that are trying to fall, but that rain will pick up as we head over the next couple of hours. We get a little push of energy that comes in from the west. That rain will kind of intensify as we get between about 7 and 10 p.m. So we will see some rain showers in most areas. Most of us will get in on some of that rainfall. Eastern Plains will have some of that rain as we fall asleep tonight, and then some snow showers for us in the mountains into tomorrow morning as well. Rainfall amounts, and this is raw model data, but just notice the hit or miss nature of that rain. Not everybody gets the meaningful quarter plus inch of rain, but most of us should get at least some later on tonight. But then later this week, watching a more intense storm system that'll approach from the west. And this one could bring us some more widespread rainfall for especially Thursday. Thursday looking like a borderline washout. Then we dry out and warm up this weekend. Let me get the soup out of the way so you can see that Monday forecast early next week. You know, the contention of having soup in the forecast. But there it is, that 7-day forecast, a pretty cool and rainy and soup weather-like day for us on Thursday.
Television has been around for 75 years, and this is the first time anybody's ever shouted at the TV, "Get your soup out of the way!" Students with disabilities are getting a space designed just for them in Lakewood. Their fellow students made it happen. That's next. A 60-year-old school in Jefferson County has reopened with a new mission to combine innovation, compassion, and community to better support students with significant needs. Our Byron Reed has the story.
We're gonna pound our chest like a gorilla.
Moving creates a change.
It's ways that we can wake up our bodies, ways that our minds can get engaged.
For special education teacher Megan Augustine,
there you go.
It's an important part of her students' day.
It establishes the routine. I think it brings that movement and that connection. Breathe in.
Augustine is a teacher at Fletcher Miller School in Lakewood. Their new building is a lifeline for students with complex physical, medical, and communicative needs.
Our students are capable of doing amazing things, and by having these spaces accessible to them really can just show us what they know.
The new 67,000 square foot space replaces the original building built in 1963. Their mission? To provide more access to high quality education.
What we have here is a conveyor belt that is controlled by switches.
Julie Osborne is the school's principal. She says the move to a new building was necessary.
One thing you'll notice are the wide corridors. We also have storage areas off the classrooms so that student additional medical equipment can be stored out of the hallways. So those are the kinds of things we do here. And this space allows us the space to do that. It allows us some flexibility in some of our rooms for instruction to happen.
Go 121.
Construction got underway last year with the help of students from Bear Creek High School who felt it was important to give back.
You know, I've always felt like, you know, doing my part was a big part of my life, making sure that all of my resources could go to other people, especially people with disabilities.
Okay.
Now Augustine's hope is the move will make a big impact and prove that with the right support, every student can thrive.
When having these spaces that are so tailored to them, we can really help them be as independent as they can.
For next.
Big difference, yes.
I'm Byron Reed.
We'll be right back with your feedback next. Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
We once again find ourselves in the soup tonight. In your feedback, Janet says, "I'm sorry, Kyle, but this time you're wrong. My grandparents from the old country, Italy, pronounce it minestrone with a soft G, and she wrote it out with like a couple of R's at the end and a G. Henry in Highlands Ranch says, my Italian grandmother used to talk about making minestrone, but not pronouncing the E, minestrone, not minestrone. He says, that is the Italian pronunciation. I feel like at this point, we should just leave the soup journalism to Channel 7.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.